This is Talk of the Nation. We're discussing the lighter side of summer reading, those decadent paperbacks that let both body and mind relax. If you'd like to join our discussion, if you have any suggestions about guilty pleasures, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Now, the controversy and the celebration of the Harry Potter book this weekend even allowed Mad Magazine to get in on the story. Their publishing date is so far in advance, they rarely get in on time. But the new issue of Mad Magazine is in my hand, and it points out that there are a few, they collected a few of the internet rumors at Shamazon.com they dug up regarding this book, and suggested that the Hogwarts students topple a statue of Lord Voldemort and beat it with their shoes. It turns out that Ron's pet rat, Scabbers, is a carrier for the SARS virus. Hagrid cuts himself while shaving his shoulders. And Harry is suspended from the Quidditch team when he's caught corking his broomstick. Well, that book will be the subject of many young readers' delight and many older ones as well. It's, of course, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, the fifth in the series. And our one book went to our next guest, Alejandra Cortez. She'll be an eighth grader next fall. She's involved in KPCC's Book Club of the Year for young adults. That's heard every month on our member station, KPCC, in Pasadena. And Alejandra joins us from her home in Los Angeles, California. Welcome.
Hi.
So how far in the book did you get?
So far, I'm in chapter 13.
Tell us a little bit about the plot. What's happened so far?
So far up to chapter 13, Harry Potter, he gets attacked by Dementors that suck up your happiness. And this book really starts out very action-packed at the beginning. And he goes back to school with new problems and with his friends and stuff.
Well, how does Harry compare in this book to the other books? We're told a lot that he's a little bit more grown up.
Yes, he's more mature. The book is written more mature, like, he thinks about more about life, his family, his past. Everything's, like, different to him in his world. Hogwarts is not the same like it used to be. It's different now.
Yeah, I guess that's a little bit like real school. Every year you go, you get new problems, right?
Yeah, right.
What do you like about the book?
What I like about the book is that once you start reading it, it's like you can't stop it. It takes you away into, like, another world. It's like fantasy. It's, like, magical.
Is there anything you don't like?
Well, no, some parts may get, like, boring because a lot of characters start talking, but it really, like, gets exciting, like, in the peak of the story.
And has this, were you a reader before Harry Potter, or has this made you into one?
No, I was a reader before, since fourth grade.
So you've been reading a lot of books and would have caught up with this one anyway?
Yeah.
But it's pretty exciting to be swept into something that's going on all over the world.
Yeah, it's like, it's... No wonder it's so famous, because it's, like, takes you away. It's, like, it's exciting.
Would you recommend this book to other readers?
Yeah, I would recommend it for people who have a lot of imagination and people who, like, want to keep on reading exciting stuff.
Well, once you're finished with this one, what are you going to read after that?
I haven't decided yet, but I think I'm going to read books from Jerry Spinetti.
Aha, uh-huh, okay. And what are those?
Like Maniac McGee, Stargirl, and other books he has from his collection.
Well, thank you very much, Alejandra.
You're welcome.
And how long do you think it's going to be before you finish the Harry Potter book?
A week, 2 weeks.
Really? You're going to drag it out?
Yeah.
Aha. That's a good plan. Alejandra Cortez joined us from her home in Los Angeles, California, where we dragged her away from her copy of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Still with us is Charlotte Abbott, book news editor from Publishers Weekly, who's with us from our bureau in New York. And as we mentioned, not all of those 5 million copies sold over the weekend are going to young people. A lot of adults are going to read this, too.
I think that's true. I think actually for adults, children's books are sometimes a guilty pleasure. And I know that the Harry Potter books have definitely been for me.
Well, which one did you like? I'm not going to get into that. Let's go back to another caller. Brian joins us now from Palo Alto in California.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm an eighth grade English teacher, and I just want to say, go Alejandra. I'm so proud that you got up there on the radio and spoke about Harry Potter. I have a recommendation for summer reading, and it is to resurrect an old classic called Forever by Judy Blume. It's a great book, great plot, and really actually pretty salacious in details. It's a great summer reading book for adults.
I always think of Judy Blume as a young adult author.
You know, she is, but I have to tell you, her plot construction and her characterizations would appeal to anyone, but Forever is a really great summer beach book if you're an adult. I mean, you'd be surprised at what she goes over in this book. It's great.
Hmm. Okay, Brian, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, take care.
Bye-bye. Go ahead, Charlotte.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I definitely have memories of reading that book and my mother finding it and taking it away from me, which I think is another quality of good guilty pleasure.
Guilty pleasure. I was also going to admit that I've read a number of young adult books as an adult. I remember Robert Lipsight's One Fat Summer just being just a terrific book. I really enjoyed that quite a bit. So they're not exclusive to children. We adults get to read them as well.
No, and actually, can I just add, there was one after the first couple of Harry Potters came out, and it was clear that it was, well, that whole question was raised of whether it was turning kids into readers. There were librarians put together whole lists of books that they thought would appeal to people who enjoyed Harry Potter. And I actually started reading some of the books on that list, wondering what else had been written since I was a kid that I might enjoy. And one of the ones that I enjoyed the most is a book called Hatchet by Gary Paulson. Do you know that one?
No, I don't.
It's there's a kid who's taking a plane to go visit his father, and in the course of it, he's flying with just a single pilot in a small aircraft over, I think it's somewhere in the upper Midwest. I'm not sure exactly, some remote part of Minnesota or Wisconsin, and the plane goes down, and with the radio, and he has to swim up through a lake where it's landed and survive in the wilderness for a matter of weeks until he can figure out a way to build a bonfire and have people come find him. And it's a great read. It doesn't matter what age you are.
Let's get back to the phones. Angela's on the line with us from Eugene, Oregon.
Hi. I'm glad you're doing a section on brain candy. I heard the last one, and I was like, but... These ones, I'm a mother of two kids, but I have to say I do stay up till 3 o'clock at night to the detriment of my next day. Reading things like David Drake for his sci-fi Hammer Slammers.
Hammer Slammers, yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Now you're in my wheelhouse, Angela.
Well, yeah, you know, I flip between that and like Heinlein. The other brain candy, I like Heinlein more seriously, but my other brain candy I hide a little bit better is the Mercedes Lackey. My husband always makes fun of me for her Valdemar series. Quite a number of books. It just goes through these people called heralds. They, you know, have various abilities, lighting fire, foresight, et cetera, et cetera. That's an awesome series. Historical fiction, I read Philippia Gregory's The Other Boleyn Girl. I read that in a day, actually. I'm really into the whole historical reenaction type thing. She goes through, she went to England, went to the various places. This is the sister of Anne Boleyn. And so she, you know, she's figured out where the daffodils were growing and what time of year, and she was going through this woman's diary. It's kind of, you know, not quite brain candy, but it satisfies that need. You know, you pick it up and you can't put it down. Another one, you said you got in trouble for reading books. In seventh grade, my mother took my entire Frank Herbert Dune series away from me because I wasn't doing my homework. So I was really excited.
Well, the problem is the Frank Herbert Dune series, you can, if you start reading that and don't turn off the light, you're going to be up for a very, very long time.
Oh, yeah, it took me all of seventh grade to get through them all. So I was kind of excited when Brian Herbert came out with his series. For me, they're not as ponderous and fulfilling as his father's, but you know, what can you expect? Although, much to my chagrin, I was like, oh, they're not the same, they're not the same. And so I didn't read them for quite a while. And I'm finally going through the third one, House Carino. And it's, you know, it's definitely improved. And, you know, much to my amazement, I'm having trouble putting it down. As much as I said, the son will never be like the father.
Well, let me ask you in particular. I mean, science fiction in general is thought to be guy stuff, and especially the military science fiction like David Drake and Hammer Slammers.
Yeah.
You know, this is real. This is not chick lit. Let's put it that way, Angela.
No, it's, you know, it's hard. I like it. Just his action sequences. My dad, he always, you know, I grew up watching all the war movies with him. You know, and Platoon is my favorite movie when I was, like, in the eighth grade. I'd watch it over and over and over again. And, you know, that's also kind of like the thing that I keep back in the closet. Like, yeah, you know, I've got kids. I'm a mom. But I really like the whole, you know, the blow 'em up, the action sequences. Steve Perry, another good sort of military sci-fi book. It's his Matador series and The Man Who Never Missed. That's really awesome, especially, you know, if you feel unsatisfied with your government right now. And in some ways, I have a couple things to say, but this is a good sort of vicarious, you know, one man against it all kind of thing.
Well, Angela, thanks very much. It sounds like you've got a solid program set out for all of the great books this summer.
Oh, yeah, I have no TV. I just read. You read and listen to the radio. You put on a great show. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for your call.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get back to that point that I was talking to Angela about, though. You know, men and women, do they buy very different sets of books?
It certainly seems that way. I mean, the fuss that publishers make when men and women are buying the same book suggests that the markets are very different. I mean, there is one bit of conventional wisdom in the industry, which is that most readers are women and most book buyers are women, which means that women tend to buy books as gifts for the people in their families.
Here's a question getting back to her Hammers Slammers question. This is a question from Stuart Foreman. Any recommendations for a good summer rip-roaring space opera? Charlotte, do you have any?
You got me, Neil.
Well, I've already recommended one book along this line, and again, this is my particular bête noire here. The Altered Carbon by Richard Morgan, just a terrific book. English author, just came out with his first novel, and he's disgustingly good. I hate him. So you might want to try that one. Here's an email we got from Rachel and Derek. We're listening to your summer trash reading program right now and are fascinated. So far, all the selections are great. Our recommendations are Neil Gaiman, American Gods. He's going to be on the program, by the way, this August. George Pelicanos, Soul Circus, third in the series, starting with Right as Rain. Sue Miller, While I Was Gone, and Jasper Fafford. That's two Fs there. I was trying to pronounce the Air Affair. George Pelicanos writes mysteries set in Washington, D.C., and another example of one of those writers who establishes either a set or a character and can seemingly run it for a long time.
That seems to be true. You know, it's funny because my main association with George Pelicanos is his publisher coming back to us year after year and saying, this year he's really going to be big. And it's true. He does keep getting bigger and bigger. But in terms of dominating the bestseller list, he still has a ways to go.
Okay. How sad that any sort of reading is considered a guilty pleasure, writes Carrie Krensky in Honolulu. Reading of any sort should be encouraged. Personally, I enjoy Clive Cussler's books. And when someone says, oh, I only read nonfiction, I feel sorry for them. Letting one's imagination soar through so-called guilty pleasure reading is one of life's great joys. And so I did mean to ask you, Charlotte, before we leave this whole issue, as you look at the rack of paperbacks staring you at the, you know, whether you go to, you know, one of the big stores, Barnes & Noble, or, you know, this just at the airport on your way out to Phoenix or wherever it is, are there ones you just go, oh, my gosh, I'm never going to read that?
Definitely.
And what are they?
Genres I never read. Let's see. Well, there are certain kinds of... I'm trying to think of things that fall into the guilty pleasures quarter. And, you know, on the other hand, though, I guess what's more memorable to me is the books that, despite thinking I would never pick them up, I've picked them up and loved. Like the National Enquirer had a book maybe a year or two ago that was... you know, various photo spreads from their different stories, you know, everything from the woman who had too much plastic surgery to, you know, sort of Elvis sightings. And, you know, it was every conceivable sort of faked and all too real image that they could put together in one book. And I thought, oh, I saw it in a bookstore. I thought, who would buy that? And I picked it up and I couldn't put it down for 45 minutes. And I bought a copy for a friend.
Just goes to show you, maybe there are no bad books, just some are better than others. Let's go to Joan, who's with us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call. You had an emailer asking about space operas, and I would very, very highly recommend one of my favorite authors, Lois McMaster Bujold.
Ah, yes.
She is just wonderful. She is an excellent writer. The stories, I don't even know how many books she's got out by now, but it's probably like 10 or 12.
I think it's a jillion.
Yeah, I think so. It's not enough, however many it is.
And she writes the Vore, V-O-R series.
Yes.
Okay.
And they're funny, and they're well-written, and they're intelligent, and I think I personally prefer reading them in order just because I'm obsessive about things like that, but I think people can pick up any book and get right into the story.
Well, Joan, thanks very much.
Sure. Oh, another person, not quite space operas, but she does mystery and science fiction, is Kate Wilhelm.
Yes, yes. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
All right. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And one caller has emailed in a question as to what is space opera, and I guess I would define it as science fiction, but there's lots of ravening laser beams, something like that. Anyway, let's see if we can get to another caller and go to Tara, who's with us from Asheboro, North Carolina.
Yes, no one has mentioned the Janet Ivanovich series, Stephanie Plume novels.
Okay.
She's a female bounty hunter, kind of, late 20s to mid-30s. I can't remember her exact age, and she gets in all sorts of adventures. She just kind of came into it, and she didn't train to be it or anything. And it's hilarious and mysterious and just rewarding. You'll just fly through the books, and you can't wait for the next one.
Again, the name?
Janet Ivanovich.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Tara.
Oh, sure.
Good reading.
Uh-huh.
And here's an email, anonymously ashamed, but loving it, somewhere in Michigan. The Regency-era romance novels of a lady named Jo Beverly have got me hooked. I was given one for airplane reading a few months ago, and now I'm even searching used bookshop websites to find the rest of her books. As a teacher of English Lit, I usually scorn these seductive serials, but man, oh man, this stuff is addictive. I've acquired one of these crafty little quilted book covers to hide what I'm reading whilst in public and actually hide the books under my favorite reading chair at home. I'm in a bad way. Charlotte Abbott, before we let you go, what books do you tuck away like that and hide?
Well, I think we've gone through most of the books on my list, I have to tell you. One thing that I've found pretty intriguing recently is cookbooks, to be honest. And
food porn, somebody in my house calls them.
Just going to say that, except I didn't know if I could say that on the show. I've been on a Nigella Lawson kick lately, and a lot of it comes down to reading about parties and household events and lavish preparations for them that I could never possibly pull off and wouldn't have the time for or the energy at the end of the work week. But there's something about the lightness that she brings and her down-to-earth quality that makes me feel like I could pull it all off. And, of course, my mouth waters as I read the recipes.
Charlotte Abbott, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
Charlotte Abbott is book news editor for Publishers Weekly. She was with us from our bureau in New York. And if you give our overworked people in our online department a few minutes to get up a list later this afternoon, you can come on and check the entire list of recommendations for trashy summer reading. Again, a description used in the best possible and most respectful tones. That's at www.npr.org, and just haul down the Talk of the Nation page. When we come back, an author who joined us a couple of years ago on his new book. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Over the past few years, we've had several young writers programs, but so far we haven't followed up with those same authors when they published their second novel. Today, we're changing all that. We've asked Matt Johnson back. He was first on the show two summers ago with his book Drop, which is about a kid from Philadelphia who moves to London to work for a small ad agency. If you have questions about the world of publishing and maneuvering through your first or second novels, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And Matt Johnson joins us today from the studios of member station WHYY in Philadelphia. His new book is Hunting in Harlem, and welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks so much for having me.
So how has this time around with Hunting in Harlem compared to the publishing of Drop?
Well, I'm no longer a publishing virgin, so I'm experiencing a whole new world. It's been fun. I mean, things have lost their, the new car smell, but I'm enjoying other aspects of it immensely.
One of the strange things is about when a book is published, even a relatively minor book, you are showered with attention. There are reviews and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, where were all these people in high school when I couldn't get a date? But yeah, it was nice. It was fantastic just to be out in the world and, have people read, the most intimate things that I wrote 3 o'clock in the morning was just amazing. So it took me a year to calm down enough to start another book after the first one.
I was going to ask, wasn't there sort of this emotional Mojave that you had to find again?
Yeah. So much about writing is just hiding, in your little room, just trying to come up with your own ideas, falling into your own world. And when you have your book actually published, it's, you get pulled out into the light and poked and prodded. And it takes a while to get the ability to pull within your mind like that again.
Hmm. What is it like when you go to readings? It must be at the same time exhilarating and at the same also very annoying.
It was, readings are like my dream, like my whole, even before I really wanted to be a serious writer, the whole idea of, being in front of the bookstore and everybody's there and they've got the books out and you're reading. I mean, it was this fantasy, and it was something that fueled me to try and work harder and harder to get to where I got. And then it's funny because once you get there, you do them again and again and again. And most times, I'm not a famous person, that's usually famous people are the people that people come out and see. So if I get like 3 people, I'm so thankful. I actually thank them so much. I creep them out.
Yeah. You all want to come down and sit in front,
can I have your number? Can I call you? But it's really cool to meet the, readers. I'm a reader. I mean, that's why I write. And actually with the second book, it's been neat because I go out to different bookstores and I see those same people again, and they've come back and they've brought friends, and that's just really touching.
What surprised you about the response?
With the new book, I didn't realize it was so controversial. I mean, like the idea of writing, a book that's supposed to have merit is you're honest. But sometimes I find it turns out I'm a little too honest. So I've had a little, a little controversy on the backlash of it. But besides that, it's just been fantastic.
You tend to write in isolation. How much in touch with your editor are you?
My editor, actually, I'm my own editor intensely. So my editor usually edits their work a lot, but I won't even let anyone see it until it's gone through at least 15 edits. I mean, that's what it feels like. So when I finally go to an editor, the conversation is pretty quick. But I give it to friends, I give it to family members, and I try and get their input.
I was curious, when I wrote a book, I was, I had always thought of the role of editor as the same as editor we have in journalism, where you're arguing over every word, over tenses,
right,
over lots of little stuff, as well as, what do you think you're doing, idiot?
Right.
That sort of stuff, too. It's very different in the book industry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like journalism or like any job you have where there's all these managers looking over top of you. With Hunting in Harlem, I thought about the book for 2 years. And then I kind of wrote it in 2 months. And I just had a daughter, and I strapped her to my chest in the Baby Bjorn and stayed up all night and typed it out. And usually I think the difference with when you write a book is the editing is very kind of hands off. Like you'll get it, you might get the book back, but it's just like, this part could have been a little better, that part. But it's not the intense, line by line, change this, change that thing.
Right, yeah, split infinitive here,
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's what people are paying for, is they're paying for a real untouched voice. The difference between a book and a movie is a book is one person's vision. And I think people want that. You get a type of honesty that you can't get with a committee.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255. We're speaking with Matt Johnson about the writing of his new book, Hunting in Harlem. And we have a phone caller. Judith is on the line with us from Tempe, Arizona.
Good afternoon.
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 Congratulations, Matt. I know how hard it is to get the first one published.
Yeah.
I published Belly of the Beast 2 years ago, and I'm now working on my second book. And one of the things that I found remarkable was, all of the talk show hosts weren't calling me wanting to interview me about my first book. I mean, where were these people? It kind of goes along with what you were saying about book signings. You just see so much of the published authors. Stephen King was on TV this morning, and you just expect you're going to get the Today Show to call you too. Did that happen to you?
No. I mean, it's a really, people don't realize how hard it is to get your voice out there. It's very difficult to get people to talk to you, and it's even more difficult to even get in the front of bookstores so people even know the book exists in the first place.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. I was fortunate. I have a lot of friends who ran all around Phoenix reorganizing bookstore shelves for me.
My mother does that.
Neil, thank you very much for these programs about reading. I am so thrilled that Harry Potter has brought reading back to the youth, and I hope that the folks in my generation who sort of let it slide by will kind of take the clue and pick up some books this summer as well, nonfiction as well as fiction, because that's what I write.
Judith, one more trick that I'll let you know is if you go into every bookstore you see and offer to sign any copies of your book that they may have, they not only can get a little sticker on it that says signed by author, but it means they can't return it.
Right.
Well, you know what? Actually, I have a quick funny story. I do that. I do that in airports. I do it in bookstores. And my book actually has done and is doing very well for a first-time author. But I went into one store one time, offered in a city that I just happened to be visiting, and offered to sign their books, and the manager said, no, thank you. That was really a slap in the face.
Well, Judith, maybe he wanted to return them quickly. So.
I think so. Thanks again so very much, and good luck, Matt.
And thanks a lot.
Good luck with your second book, Judith.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Matt Johnson, before we let you go, tell us a little bit about your book. And I understand, I know there's a section you've picked to read for us. Set it up for us.
Oh, great. My book's called Hunting in Harlem, and it's about real estate agents in Harlem that start killing off lowlifes in the neighborhood so they can move people with money in. And it was kind of based on my experience living in Harlem and working in Harlem and the gentrification that's going on. The piece I pulled out is about one of the main characters who's an intern who's brought to work at the company who doesn't realize quite what's happening. They're making all these deaths look like accidents, so I'll read that for you. Just because every metal sidewalk door you've ever walked on has held your weight doesn't mean they all will. Some become concave from years of pedestrians and simply fold underneath that 1 foot too many. Sometimes there's rust underneath where you can't see it, making it brittle like metal matzah. Step on the wrong one and you could shred an ankle, a kneecap as you lose the ground beneath you. Step on the wrong one and you can, your whole body, go right through. Who can say how far down it'd be before you reach the ground again? You can't. You don't even know how long it'd be before they found you. It could even be one of those grates you tread over every day without thinking, like it was for Irene Bell of 843 Lennox, number 4. One minor step in a day of many, the context changes, and it's the final one. They find you 2 weeks later only because it smells so bad the Con Ed man checking the meter next door to the abandoned building thinks it's worth calling the cops over. Think of how bad that's gotta stink that a man will call the police in response to it. So many ways to die. If you don't choose one, a method will be appointed to you. Life's only guaranteed service.
Matt Johnson reading from his new novel, Hunting in Harlem. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much. It's been an honor.
Matt Johnson was with us from the studios of member station WHYY in Philadelphia. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.